difficulty, of course, in discussing helps us take that is we don't know where to start and we don't know where to end. So it's impossible, of course, to discuss all of those topics. We try and pick different topics every year. We try and focus on what we can. So I'd like to discuss a little bit this week the halachas of kashrin, hazalas kelim, generally, and then also specifically with regard to Pesach. Very, very important to know the principles. So, very important to know the principles of Haggadah, where it comes from, how it works, and then also practically, a number of people have already been asking, Shilas, can I flash my stove? Can I flash my microwave? And must I have a different oven? And what about my gas top, my sink, different kelim, etc., etc. These are Shilas that must be asked, very important to be asked, and they must be addressed. The Makar of Haggadah Kelim, we look in the Torah, and we see in Parshas Matis. Parshas Matis, Klal Yisrael return from battle with Midian, and they are told the following. Vayomer Elozo HaKohen El Anshei HaKtova. Elozo HaKohen, the son of Aaron, told the people of war, this is the way it works. Hazor, gold, Keter, silver, Nechoshet, Barzel, Habadil, Vetzoi, forests. All different types of metal. Now here the crucial words. Kol davar asher yovoi ba'ish, anything that has been through fire, ta'aviru ba'ish, should go through fire. That which has not got through fire should go through water. Very vague, not clear exactly what the Torah is discussing. In fact, some ask, how do you know it's talking about kashrin and kelim at all? Maybe it's talking about kelim which are tummy, and you need to be metahir though. So the Rambam says it can't be referring to that because we never metahir anything with fire. And so it's clearly stipulated over here that you've got to be mesakinut with fire. So from here we learn the inyan of Haggadah Kelim. Now just as a side note, the Rishonim discussed this was not the first time that they battled with goyim. This was, in fact, at least the second time when they battled with Sichon and Oig. Presumably, they came back there also with Kelim. So, why weren't they given the instruction of Haggadah Kelim? That is a big discussion. Why did we need to wait till the second battle of Midian? But be that as it may, they come back from Midian and they are told, if you want to use the Kelim which has been used by non-Jews, you first have to kasher them, what we call Haggadah. Now, when we talk about the word Haggadah, what does the word Haggadah actually mean? The word Haggadah comes from the word Gil, which literally means something is Gil in the Galilee, something which is despicable. These Bleas, whatever is absorbed in the Kli, is, as it were, despicable to us, we want to get rid of it. In other words, what we've been taught over here is a big fish, that the Goyim have used the Kelim for their forbidden foods, and in our case, for chametz, which is not forbidden during the year, but it is on Pesach, that will be absorbed into the kli, chiddush number one, and chiddush number two is, whenever you cook next time in this kli, we are concerned that the bliyos, whatever is absorbed in the walls of the kli, will now be spewed out into your food, and you'll therefore be eating forbidden foods. Now, there is a huge discussion, I don't want to get involved in it at the moment, either way, that is the bottom line, that is what the Torah requires.
It's sort of kasher, I don't understand
who this
kasher for
Torah,
right now it's kasher. What
about
it? Who is
kasher?
The feeling killing after going.
Not Vila, Haggadah.
I'm sorry.
Vila is different. Vila is to do with Tumah. Well, they are related, but Tzvila is to do with Tumah. Haggadah is to do with Kashrut. Mm-hmm. So in theory, if you buy a new Kli from a Goy, you'll have to tell you that you have to Kashrut. It's never been used. So we've been taught over here a number of solutions. Number one, so when you cook food into a Kli, there are bleas, absorptions in the walls of the Kli. That's Chiddush number one. Chiddush number two is that if they get into the wall, then presumably they can also get out of the wall. Such that when you cook next time in this kli, all the absorptions will be spewed out into your food and you'll be eating macholet afterwards. Now, Some maintain, some reshain, it's not the way we pass him. If it says stipulate, this is what you must do, then it is in fact a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. Most reshain hold no content. All the Torah is telling you is, practically, if you want to use the Kelim, it's what you have to give. It's not a mitzvah as such. And this might therefore answer the question, why is it that we do not make a bracha on a Golas Kelim? We do make a bracha on Tvivas Kelim. So why don't we make a bracha on Golas Kelim? So some say because it's not a mitzvah at all. Others suggest different reasons. Some say that the reason why you don't make a bracha on Golas Kelim is because it's not a mitzvah as such, as we just mentioned. Rather, there happens to be macholos asuros, forbidden foods which are absorbed in this tree. We already know that you can't eat those. Nothing new has been taught to us other than this is the process by which you extract them. For example, when you shecht a behemoth, you're not allowed to eat some of the fat, the chelot. So when you take the meat and you pluck out the fat, you don't make a bracha on that, because why not? Because this is just the old fashioned ifa, do not eat fat, and of course you've got to meat with fat, you've got to get rid of the fat. This is exactly the same. Now, again, there is a huge area of discussion in this, because when you think about it, we do many isurim like that, many mitzvahs, and we do make a bracha. Bior chametz, isn't that the same? You're not allowed to have chametz in your house. If you take the chametz out of your house, why do you make a bracha? What's the difference between a bracha that you make on beer chametz and agolas kelim? We don't make a bracha. What's the difference between getting rid of chametz and getting rid of macholos asuros? So you could say it's not really a kasha. You could, because beer chametz is a mitzvah. Beer chametz is a mitzvah. It says tashkisu. There's no mitzvah agolas kelim, but that is good for the kasha. How do you know there's no mitzvah? And the Torah says, "Kolash Yovel Beish Tavir Beish." Maybe there is a mitzvah. If a woman becomes tummy, she becomes a tummy nida. So she's the table in the mikvah, and then she becomes tired. She makes a bracha. Why does she become make a bracha? All she's doing is getting rid of the tumah. So what's the difference between getting rid of the tumah, getting rid of chametz, getting rid of macholos asuros? This is a big discussion. But be that as it may, as we know, agolas kelim is certainly a halacha as prescribed by the Torah, but we do not make a bracha on it, although we do make a bracha on tefillah kelim. Now, here comes very, very important background principles to the way that agolas kelim works. And that is, we have a principle, everybody knows it, principle of bitul b'shishim. Bottle b'shishim. Food which is mixed up, itza, together with hekta, will be bottled if there is 1 in 60. If that's the case, why must I do hagolas kelim? All I need to do is make sure that when I cook in the kli, I have 60 times the amount of hekta, keneged the itza, and then I've done away with all hagolas kelim. There are two reasons why that is not true. Firstly, is a technical reason, and secondly, a halachic reason. The technical reason is, the Gemara tells us, and this is one of the big difficulties of when you learn this whole sugya, we don't know how much is absorbed in the wall of the kli. So if I take a piece of meat, which is one kazayit big, and I cook it into the kli, how much is now considered to be absorbed in the walls of the kli? What do you mean by kazayit? How can there be a kazayit absorbed in the walls of the kli? Here's my kazayit of meat, it's here, it didn't disappear. If the whole meat would disappear and vanish into thin air, then I could appreciate, well, where's it gone to? Maybe it's absorbed into the walls. It didn't vanish into thin air. Maybe it shrunk a little bit, but it didn't go down by kazayit. That is a big discussion. The bottom line is, if you cook a kazayit, we assume that there is a kazayit worth of bliyot absorbed into the walls of the kli. Meaning that if you cook a full kli, we presume that all the walls are completely saturated with bliyot of itza. Now, here's one for the scientists. The Rishonim tell us, and unless you have a very specific sense, it's impossible, however the kli, whatever the shape of the kli, it's impossible to ever fill a kli and have shishim in it Kineged, the thickness of the wall. Unless you have a very, very wide, extremely paper thin plea, then if you make up mathematics, you work out you can have shishim, and in a standard case, you can't. Which means that even if we're going to start speculating whether shishim would work, it's all irrelevant because you can never have shishim. That is the practical reason. The halachic reason is a different issue. Because technically, what we said is not actually accurate. Why is it not accurate? Because it's true. When the walls are completely saturated, it's impossible to have shishim in the kli. Even if you fill the kli brimful, you won't have shishim. One second. That's if the walls are completely saturated. Imagine you go to a goy and you buy a kli from him. Or you borrow a kli from him and you say, have you ever used this kli? He says, yes, once. And I cooked one kazayah of pork in it. Ah, you only cooked one kazayah. That means here, all of the walls won't necessarily be saturated because we know how much is actually cooked in this kli. So it's a big kli, and I can put in 60 kazeisim, then there will be a bit of a shishim. If all the walls would be saturated, however much you fill it, you'll never have shishim kineged or balua in the walls. But if I know how much is in the walls, there's one tiny amount. So I can fill shishim times that amount. So here we have the principle, no. Halachically, you're not allowed to be mevatel and iser lechatzur. That means, if pork falls into your food, by mistake, by accident, then you phone up your rov and he'll ask you, was the roi, was the shishim, was the he'll ask you a whole bunch of questions. But that doesn't mean you can take a piece of pork, drop it into your chalom and say, fine, shishim! Not only can you not do that, Chazal said that if you did do it, b'diavad, we don't even allow you to eat it. So you can't outsmart Chazal. So therefore, that is why we're doing Haggadah in the first place. Firstly, because practically we don't know that we have shishim, and secondly, even if I do know that I have shishim, you're not allowed to be mevatel iser lechatzur. So here comes the $64 million question. If that's the case, you told me that what? I've got a kli, which is absorbed with iser, or in our case, chomer. It's absorbed with iser. Now, if I want to be mevatel it, how would you be mevatel it? I would cook in this kli a very, very big cholent, presuming that I know that I have 60 times in this cholent kineged how much is balua in the wall. I've got shishim, what are you telling me? Sorry, you're not allowed to do that. That's bittul iser lechatchila. So here comes the big question. So how do you ever do Haggadah then? How does Haggadah work? You put water, fill it in the kli, or you put it in a very, very large kli, huge swimming pool of hot water, so that now all of the bliyos that are extracted from the kli are all bottled but shishim. So you've just gone and done what you weren't allowed to do in the first place, which is what? Bittul iser lechatchila. If I'm not allowed to cook in the kli because I'm being famous on bittul iser, how do I ever do Haggadah? All the Rishonim give ask this question and they all give the same answer. You know what the answer is? Bittul iser lechatchila means as follows. I've got a piece of chazir, and I say to the Torah, you know Torah, you don't let me eat this chazir. I'm going to outsmart you. I'm going to eat it. I'm not a Russia. I'm going to throw it in shishim and in three bottles. You're not allowed to do it. Don't outsmart the Torah. Don't rely on bittul in order to eat it. But when you kasher a kli, I'm not trying to be mevatel in shishim in order to eat the bria. To the contrary, I'm in mevatel in shishim to get rid of the bria. I have no interest whatsoever in eating the bria. That's why I'm doing Haggadah in the first place. So I'm not trying to outsmart the Torah. I'm only outsmarting the Torah if I'm doing bittul in order to eat the iser. Here, I'm not doing it in order to eat the iser. To the contrary, I'm trying to get rid of the iser. I'm trying to get all of the bliyos extracted from the kli into the water. The bottom of the shishim says, fine, brilliant, excellent. I've got rid of the bliyos now. I'm not trying to outsmart the Torah. Therefore, that's the way Haggadah works. Now, there is an opinion in the Rishonim, the Rashba, and others who say the following. Imagine you have a tea which is only balua with a very small amount of it. you happen to know it only has a tiny bit of Issa absorbing. And it's the type of plea that whenever you use, you always have shishim. Now I must tell you, I have this shaila every single week. I had it this week again on Friday. What's the classic case? The classic case is as follows. I've got my hot water, Shabbat, cooking on Erev Shabbat on the flame, I want to heat up the water. Next to it, I was cooking my cholent, and I noticed that a piece of cholent splatted on the side of this kettle. Okay, I'd always ask the person, tell me, how much hit the kli? Very small amount. So what is the question now? Yeah, but I'm worried, because if the kli, if the kettle became fleshy, became meaty, I want to use water from this kettle and pour it in my coffee with milk. Big question. The Rashba would tell you you're fine. Do you know why you're fine? Because a very, very small amount got absorbed. Not about you cooked meat in the kettle, just a little splat, a little droplet typically. Such that whenever you cook water in the kettle, you always have shishim. Under those circumstances, we let you use the kli. That's not called bittul issel chatchila. That's just called using the kli in a regular way. We don't pass him like this Rashba. We say that's also. However, if there are other tzurukim, other factors involved, some place you are made for. The fact I mentioned, for example, this classic shay which happens every week. I was cooking the cholent and something splattered on the side of the kettle. Could be that without a tzibur, one could be made. It's very, very important to know that whenever something spills and hits another kli, the first thing you must tell the Rav is how much spills. Because if it's a very, very small amount, there would be circumstances where one could be made. Now, in conclusion, we will say, and we'll continue with this on Tuesday, much of this discussion does not apply to chametz. Why? Because we paskin, although there is a discussion, but we paskin the chametz in that case. Chometz is a mashim. If I have one grain of chometz in a billion, fascinating question, which is as follows, and I'll leave you this to think about. Somebody once asked me this question in London. In London, all of London's water supply comes from the River Thames. What is the Thames River?
Thames River.
Thames River. So somebody asked the following question. One second. How can I ever turn on my tap on Pesach to drink water? Somebody in London, and there's 10 million people in London, might have dropped his bread in the Thames River to feed the ducks. What are you going to say? Fine, it's only a dot of bread. But if it's on Pesach, it's not bottle, I feel a billion, the shishim, the billion.
We're not coming to that problem with the water, right. But that's for sure it's filtered. No actual phone goes through it, not hot the water.
Doesn't it pass up? It's Jewish bread, it's not Jewish bread irrelevant. If I had one grain, one crumb of chametz in the Thames River, the whole Thames River is offered to drink on Pesach. And when you open the tap, what are you getting? Thames River water.
Even though before it comes from, I agree, we go to the Thames River and take our water, that's a problem, but now it's being filtered out.
Okay. She's saying, no one is being filtered. As it happened, there's an inquiry, somebody told me that the way it works is, from the time that the water is extracted from the river, until it actually reaches your tap, it takes more than a week. It goes through all the filtering systems, which means any chometz that was dropped in there on Pesach only arrives in your house after Pesach. After Pesach, chometz is bottled. And so too, before Pesach, it's also bottled. So if somebody dropped bread in the Thames before Pesach, it was bottled then, because it arrives to on Pesach, it's fine. If he dropped it in the river on Pesach, it's not bottled, but don't worry, by the time it reaches you, it'll be
on Pesach.
It takes more time than it does duration of Pesach to arrive at your house. But our kapon is a very, very important principle. And that's why this is the worst shayli, the Kornfeld told me, the worst ever shayli he's ever had. This is something a number of years ago, just after he came a rabbi. Somebody told him he took something out of the freezer and cooked it up. It turns out that he thought it was fish. It turned out to be breaded schnitzel, that he cooked the milk on Pesach.
Oh.
Bota, b'chala, chomet, so he writes that on Pesach.
Oh, wow.
Sean again. Make sure you don't do it. That's the introduction to Amal HaKilim. If Hashem is doing the rest of the week, we'll get involved in more practical examples.